Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your host, Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast. I'm Bob DeMarco. On this edition of the show, I'm speaking with Carter from Edged Mindset, a YouTube knife channel that I've been watching through its evolution for about 12 years now. I initially tuned into his content when the knife video landscape was still kind of a barren place, but there his voice rose above the sparse chatter with honest and passionate takes on the knives I wanted to have. Carter's channel has covered other topics in the past, most notably guns, but knives have always been at the core, hence the name Edged Mindset. He features plenty of pricey, exotic, aspirational pieces, mostly folding knives, while remaining relatable with his winning personality and his abiding love for Emerson knives and cold steel. Well, in my mind, this conversation has been years in the making, so let's get into it. But first, be sure to like, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell, and download the show to your favorite podcast app. And as always, if you want to help support the show, you can do so on Patreon. Just go to thenifejunkie.com/Patreon. Again, that's thenifejunkie.com/Patreon.
Adventure delivered. Your monthly subscription for hand-picked outdoor, survival, EDC, and other cool gear from our expert team of outdoor professionals. TheKnifeJunkie.com/BattleBox.
Ever strop a knife again, even though it gets no real use? Face up to what you are. You're a knife junkie.
Carter, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm super, super excited to be here. I don't get to talk about knives nearly enough to, like, an actual person. My wife does not care. Nobody at work cares. So it's either just me talking to myself in a camera, or this is the first time I really get to talk to somebody. So really excited. Man. Really cool.
Oh, that is the whole genesis of this show. Oh boy, how much, like, I think I've saturated the landscape here with my chatter. I better start talking to people who really it means something to. So you have been doing this a long time. And your voice must be very familiar to a lot of people. You used to go by Juju1313.
Yeah.
And I mean, I never really thought about how to pronounce it, but those letters and the numbers were so familiar to me. I just want to start from the beginning of your channel. How did you get your start? At this time, I just want to remind people, there weren't too many people. Nothing Fancy, of course. His name's escapes me all of a sudden. The guy you used to have a banter back and forth with, the kind of a skinny dude, cool southern guy, I think. His name will pop up. But anyway, what was it like at the start for you?
It was just fun. I mean, that's all it was, right? Because the concept of, like, YouTubers and creators and things, it didn't exist at that time. So it was really cool because everybody making content were doing it because they just wanted to do it and they wanted to talk about the stuff they wanted to talk about. And that was it, man. I just started doing videos. Thanks to Jeff, aka Cutlery Lover. He's the one that it wasn't even so much that I, like, loved his stuff that much. It was more I saw what he was doing and I was like, I think I can do that. I can do that. I'm just going to start doing that. So he's the one that kind of got me doing it. And Metal Complex is the guy that kind of brought me back a couple of years ago, because I left for, like, a really decent amount of time, wasn't really doing anything, and because I'm getting ahead of myself. So, I always liked knives, always had a passion for them, especially, like, swords and crazy fantasy knives as a kid, martial arts weapons. I remember when I was, like, 10 years old, my family couldn't afford to put me in, like, martial arts classes or anything, but I knew a kid whose family did. And so what he would do is he would take a bunch of us and teach us what he learned in martial arts class, like on a Saturday morning. And you can imagine, because I grew up in a little coal mining town, so I can only imagine the quality of these lessons that are, like, secondhand from some guy in this little town teaching a 10-year-old who's not teaching us. But we loved it. We ate it up. He had this this catalog full of, like, size and swords and throwing stars and all this stuff. And I would just pore over this magazine, wanted to save money to buy some of that stuff. So I've always loved weapons. And when I got older and I could actually buy some of the stuff, I just started collecting it. First, I got into balisongs because I wanted something I could collect and also like try to learn, you know? And that's what brought me to Cutlery Lover, because I learned my first like 5 balisong tricks off his videos. And then I moved into folders, and then I started doing videos, and it kind of just took off from there, and I just kept doing it.
So you're, as I mentioned before, or maybe I didn't quite clearly, but I really kind of got hooked on you. I think it was in your Emerson phase, your first one, I don't know, years back. And I got to say, this is funny. I'm only really thinking of this now, but watching your videos and watching you open and close, and this is the slow roll days, like everything is this. Watching you open and close a knife kind of taught me how to open and close knives one handed. The pass off of fingers when you're closing a liner lock or a frame lock. I was like, that's how you do it. It was always kind of a little like, but my finger's in the way, you know? So watching your videos and, your videos and others at the time really got me, hooked in a weird way. Because it's like watching people eat makes you hungry. It's kind of a similar thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, appreciate that. That's really cool. I never really intended to teach anybody anything. So that's awesome. Whenever you hear stuff like that, I was just trying to have a good time showing the stuff that I liked. That was way before like the drop shutty days, man. The idea of a knife drop shutting. I think if you had a knife that would drop shut back in those days, people would hate it because they would think it's too dangerous. It's weird how times change.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm interested. Well, since we're there and I don't want to forget about that. What do you think of that? What do you think of this evolution since, yeah, you were gone for a little while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do know that you love washer knives a lot, you know. But how have you taken to the new stuff?
For the actual knives, like, I dig them. It took a minute, right, to, like, readjust to them because I left doing knife stuff, like, right about the time that bearings and drop shut and all that kind of started to really take hold. I mean, it was there before, but it really started to take off like right when I left. I feel like I missed a huge, like critical part of the knife community. So I come back and yeah, there was a lot that was different. And it took me a minute to get used to it and start to appreciate those. But once I did, I dig them and I appreciate them for different reasons, compared to like the slow roll washer stuff. I still love my Striders, still like Emerson, but the new stuff's cool too. The biggest thing that I struggled with was the complete abandonment of like the overbuilt, big, rough knives, right? That's the harder one. Coming back, I've always struggled with small knives. It's not that I don't like them. It's going to sound weird. It's more of a money thing. Like if I'm spending a good amount of money, I feel like I need a lot of material there. I struggle with paying $900 for like a Roosevelt. Just a mental block. It's not that it's not a great knife. I just struggle with it.
Oh man, I totally get it. I totally get it. I mean, my tastes also veer towards the weapony and the large. But yeah, I get it. It's like, well, why doesn't that cost? It doesn't have as much material. Shouldn't it be? But you know, and that's not exactly logical, but that's just. Not that this whole thing isn't exactly logical.
Yeah, it's not. And the reason why, like, I really got into knives and why I gravitate towards those kind of larger overbuilt category is because the knives I grew up with are really kind of the knives that are popular now. So the knives I had as a kid, and granted, these were all like super cheap versions, but traditionals, little tiny folders, little flippers, things like that. And so, when I got into like higher end mid-level knives and I saw these big behemoth things that were completely different than anything I've ever had, it just kind of blew my mind. I had no idea something like that existed. So now that the smaller stuff is back in fashion, I just kind of feel like those are the knives that I grew up with and I carried when I was really young. So they just don't excite me as much, I guess. But I definitely appreciate all the craftsmanship, the design, everything involved with those. I think it's great. And I think it's awesome that anybody's into any kind of knife. So I totally support any of this stuff. I think it's great for the scene. And I feel like some of the bigger stuff is kind of gaining popularity again a little bit. Like, you know, maybe not mainstream popularity, but some people are starting to pick them up. Like Max Ace is doing a lot of really cool stuff with that. I'm really digging those.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, you've run to the refuge of MaxAce and Microtech, I've noticed. Microtech has some good large size knives, and they're just so, there's just something about those knives there. I don't know. Microtech's just really get me going lately. That's my latest little sub collection jag. So I was doing some research watching your amphibian videos and your Stitch videos. But yeah, MaxAce, they are really carrying that torch like proudly. I love them.
Yeah, really funky stuff. Speaking of like Microtech and MaxAce, I think there's a lot of design language similarities. I think really like MaxAce kind of took a lot of the design stuff that Microtech was doing and then applied that kind of more towards like the bigger Strider-esque type knives and kind of created their own thing, which is pretty cool.
So speaking of Strider, Emerson, Chris Reeve knives, which I know you've enjoyed. Also, it seems like earlier you were more into the American knives. Now you are just kind of more into knives in general. Is that a fair assessment? I've also seen a lot more fixed blades on your channel now.
Yeah, it's all over the place. I mean, that's one of the things I've struggled with, having a YouTube channel and then also being like a passionate enthusiast. It's really hard to kind of mash those two things together because one doesn't really feed the other. Like, personally, as a knife person, I tend to get into like a really narrow scope of interest. Like, I like to support certain brands and I'll go into phases where I am just a Strider guy and I want to know everything about them, what they've made, the different variances. I've got my grails in mind. I've got my users. But that's not very good for a YouTube channel, or at least if you're trying to get to a broad audience, right? Most people don't want to hear you talk over and over again about the same brand and show the same stuff. So for a while there, I did try to branch out and broaden it. I wanted to feature more knives that would appeal to kind of a greater audience, hopefully, and have a little more variety in my channel. But I'm starting to sneak back into my old ways, and I'm going back on a Strider kick. And, you know, I don't know. It is what it is.
But I think you've already developed a winning recipe. Like, I don't think you need to change anything. And people understand the obsessiveness. And oftentimes people want to go on that trip with you, whether they're going to parallel it with their own. Oh man, I'm really into Civivis right now, but I'm really digging these Strider videos. I know where he's coming from. Yeah, like I would say, like you're kind of spelling out what it is. It is a bit of a, you know, obsession. You get really deeply into one thing, and I mean, it can also get expensive running a channel like that. So how do you manage, like, because I know that you have some very nice knives on there. Do you borrow knives? Do you buy knives? Like, do you have relationships with makers? How does it work for managing your channel?
Most of it is just self-funded, unfortunately. I have done a few things with some retailers. They sent me some stuff to check out. I received some cheaper knives, just, hey, review this. You know, you can keep it. But I could count that on 10 fingers that's happened. Most of it is, I buy stuff and I sell it, right? So a lot of people think everything I show on my channel, I always have. I only have so many at any given time. So my collection isn't super vast because to get new stuff, I sell stuff. It's not the most efficient way to do it. That's one of the things I've been trying to fix too, is come up with a more reasonable way to keep getting new knives on my channel without sending me into the poorhouse, but still working on that.
Yeah. Especially for, you know, the kind of knives you like.
Yeah.
But I do find, that it's harder to sell the cheaper knives. It's harder to sell the impulse buy knives. So I'll pick on Civivi again. I come in and out of them. I'm like, man, they always have such cool, like, they take all the risks with Civivi and Sencut, and then they pass it along up to Wii oftentimes. That's what it feels like anyway.
Yeah.
And so I like the chances they take. So let me just buy this and see what it's like. And then you end up having a whole bunch of them. It's like, you give them away, you try and sell them, but people don't want to buy them. They're so inexpensive and so good that they can just kind of drop it in their Amazon cart, get a brand new one. And I don't know. That's just the justification of someone who wants to hold on to everything. Do you find it hard to part with some of these knives?
Not too much. I do have a lot of knife regret though, because I kind of, like I mentioned before, I'll bounce around between interests and, you know, I was into Microtex really hard, like, I don't know, a year ago or something. But then once I kind of get out of it and move into something else, I don't have a problem selling those off until the next time I get back into Microtex and I'm like, why did I yeah. sell those? I had like yeah. so many awesome pieces. And I think back to a lot of the knives I used to have. I had some really cool stuff and I regret selling them, but I just got to remember, yeah, I can pick on the ones I shouldn't have sold, but there's a bunch that I definitely should have sold and I do not have any regrets selling. So it's, you know, it's a give and take. You can't keep them all. I just, yeah. you know, just do what you can.
So where do you stand on customs? Seems like sometimes you're forking out custom funds for some of the like high-end production stuff you might be showing. Do you have a feeling one way or another about custom knives?
I struggle with customs, to be honest, especially lately. I've seen so many issues people have had with placing orders with custom makers. It makes me leery to try to do that. I've seen a lot of well-respected custom makers that I looked up to go through hard times and kind of things go south and their name gets tarnished and it's just a bad deal. So I kind of struggle on that front. And then I'm also generally just really picky with the machining and craftsmanship of the knife and with the way that modern production machining is going now. It's like, it's so spot on and perfect. It used to be that custom knives were the best way to get the best finishes, the cleanest production, things like that. But it's kind of switched now. It's a weird situation we're in, where machining has gotten so good and so precise that it's kind of beating the hand built stuff, in a lot of ways. But, I don't know, man. I could talk forever about the custom stuff because it's changed so much. Like back in the day, when I say back in the day, I'm talking like, you know, 2010 to 2000, whatever, 16 or so. Mm-hmm. Custom knives were like crucial to the knife hobby because that's where all of the latest stuff was coming out of, you know. Yes. This was when Spyderco didn't do titanium frame locks. Like you couldn't buy those large production companies. Like if you wanted that kind of style, acid stonewashing and titanium and anodizing and all that stuff, it was all coming out of the custom side. And if it proved itself in the custom knives, enough people were into it, then it would trickle down into the production knife companies and they'd start making them. That's where like early ZT came from, things like that. Lock bar inserts, bearings and knives, that all came from the custom industry and then made its way into the production world. And I don't know if I'm just disconnected. I just don't see that kind of innovation so much anymore, which is sad. I feel like kind of the custom part of the knife community is kind of shrinking. Which I don't love, but I'm obviously not doing anything to support it either, per my own admittal. So
that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think you're right about that. That is where everything was coming out of, and then yeah. it got absorbed into manufacturing, which is obviously evolving at the same time and can take it and do it better. It's kind of like what AI is going to do with us right here soon. But taking that, ball bearings, great idea. Oh, micro milling, awesome idea. And let's put it into these like $1 trillion machines and watch what it can do. And we'll sell it to you for $200. That's the other thing. Just the cost differential, now between customs and these high end Chinese. And I'm talking about folders right now. And I must admit, I have experience with fixed blade customs, but really very, very little experience with folders.
Oh, really? With custom folders?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always been kind of my jam. I'm just barely now trying to make myself get into fixed blades, sort of. I mean, I'm enjoying it, but, you know, I'm really kind of pushing to say, I got to check this world out because I've been in the folder world so long. It's like all I ever cared about.
So now what do you look for in a folder? Like, we've talked about brand loyalty. I don't like to say it like that because I don't feel like it's that. You get obsessed with a maker's style and build quality and all that kind of stuff. But what do you look for generally in a knife? What's your wheelhouse, quote unquote?
Something interesting. I mean, something funky, something not boring. And that's kind of my whole life. All around, I like things with bright colors, crazy design choices. I like things that take risks. That's what catches my eye. A lot of people, you know, will say, well, that's gas station-y, that's cheap, that's gaudy. I get it. I like gas station knives too, though. Like I've been in gas stations where I see a knife and I'm like, man, if that was Magna Cut, I would be totally buying that right now. Like, I'll take that dragon handle. Sign me up. That's awesome. That's usually what it is. And I try to, cause I get a lot of criticism for that on my videos, right? All the time. Gas station knife, you know, that's cheap. That's garbage. What are you going to do with that thing? But I just roll with it now. It is what it is. That's what I'm drawn to. Anything bold with a strong design language, bright colors, things like that, that kind of catches my eye.
Yeah, the I noticed while Jim was just scrolling on your page, the Midgard Messers. You've got some of those German behemoths.
Yeah.
For me, like that's a bridge too far for me. But a knife like that, for instance, or we were talking before, you have a Phil Harvey, an amazing knife, but not your average pocket knife. Do you carry all of these?
No, but not because I have some aversion to it. I have too many. And I physically can't, but I guess it depends on your definition of carry. So I've worked from home for the past like 3 years. So I only leave like the house a handful of times during the week. So I carry knives around the house. And I swap them out like all day. You know, I'll just grab a couple.
Yeah.
I'm on a work call or something. I'm playing with them and then I put them back and I grab some other ones. Go for a walk around the park, grab a knife, take some photos of it, that kind of thing. But yeah, when I do leave the house, I do carry just about everything. There are a few really expensive ones that I kind of hold on to as, you know, I just want to leave them untouched, mainly because if I do need to sell them, I want to make sure I can get, you know, as much out of them as I can. But I do try to carry everything that I have.
What would you tell someone who's tempted, because, you know, we can really kind of go down our own rabbit holes with this, but what would you tell someone who's tempted to be irresponsible in order to get some of these prestige knives or the kind of knives we aspire to have, aspirational knives?
Just be smart about it. Like that's what it is. And if you can't be smart about it, then just don't do it. Know what the resale value is. Buy it at that or below, and then you'll be good, right? Because, I mean, that's how my whole channel was. Like, even if you go back to the original, like, I had a mixed Strider Damascus blade with a Damascus front scale that I had. I bought that knowing full well I can't keep the thing. I had no business having it, but I knew I could get it. I could check it out. I could do some videos, take some pictures, and then I could sell it and get my money back. So if you think of it more, and this is going to sound weird, but if you think about it more like the stock market, right? You're trading fiat currency for a physical asset. The physical asset has a value that's deemed, according to the marketplace. And as long as that's a fair trade, and any money that you lose when you exchange that again for fiat currency, you're willing to accept, then you're good. It's not that big a deal.
That is that's a clean way of looking at it. And if you can do that, more power to you. I find them difficult to sell. First of all, like unreliable in terms of where I sell and whether they're going to sell. But also, what do I have? What am I willing to part with? Is more the thing. And is that the really desirable stuff that people are going to buy? And then you end up with hundreds of knives. And eventually there's got to be a reckoning So now you're my therapist. I'm just like talking about, I really do have to get rid of some stuff. And, for a while I was treating it like a museum, like you said.
Yeah.
Anything interesting. Like, oh, I don't have this lock. Well, do you need that lock? Are you going to carry it? Or no one's coming and paying admission to check out this lock you're not going to use. I've run into a bit of that. Tell me about like what you see in terms of trends that, okay, you were talking about, Juju 1313, you stop for a while. You came back, you did some other stuff, some pew-pews and some snakes or working out stuff. You did a lot of different stuff.
I did some snake stuff. Yeah, that was an old hobby I was into. My wife, she put an end to that, though. So that's no longer allowed. I feel the pull every once in a while, but I'm like, nah. That one's a tough one, though. It's a messy hobby. So I'm cool with staying away from that. The pew-pew stuff, I've actually kind of really made an effort to just separate myself from that recently. So I've gotten rid of all of that content on my channel, which, you know, I've made the mistake of kind of mixing content on this channel way too many times. I've flip-flopped, and it's always been a little bit of a messy thing every time I transition from one hobby to the other. So finally, I'm doing it the right way, and I'll do a different channel for that content and keep this one, the original channel, solely knife-focused is the goal now.
So when you were not producing content, were you still collecting knives? Were you still thinking about them and kind of engaged the same way and just not documenting it?
No, not really. I really kind of just got out of the whole thing. And, you know, I had a young family, youngish family at the time. I was busy. I was trying to focus on career. I was trying to went on a health kick, you know, the mid-30s health kick, doing that a lot. But I held on to a few knives, but most of them I sold. Unfortunately, I wish I hadn't done that. But, yeah, I sold a lot of them and kind of really distanced myself. I'm still wondering exactly why. I don't know why. I don't know exactly why I did that. But yeah, I really kind of just washed my hands of the whole thing and stepped away for some reason.
Huh. So what inspired you to come back in different forms?
Usually what it is it's freaking YouTube, man. I remember like with the pew-pew stuff, I had bought a new one and I hadn't bought anything in a long time. I bought a new one. And just the thought popped in my head, hey, you should do a video unboxing this thing. You haven't made a video in like 2 years. You might as well. Why not? And so I did. And for some reason, that video blew up. And then, of course, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, I got to keep going. This is great. You know, this is the ticket. And of course, none of the other videos did very well. But I tend to go overboard when I get into these things. And that's usually what causes me to kind of step back and get away from it. Because I kind of need to say, you got to cool your jets, and YouTube kind of enables me sometimes because it gives you that extra urge of like, I should get that thing that would make a good video. If I get this thing, I could compare it to this one and that's good content, you know, and yeah. It just gives you that little extra push to maybe do things you shouldn't really do. And, so sometimes I just have to say, I gotta step away from it.
Interesting. Yeah. It's like a dopamine hit, little dopamine. Oh, did you see how many? It's only been up for 4 hours. What?
Yeah. You think you finally cracked the code, and then yeah. It ends up not being the case.
It's funny. I've experienced that a couple of times. Never gone viral or anything like that, but I've had a couple of videos that have, you know, oddly blown up. Like, really? That one? You know, have just blown up weirdly like that. So when you returned to knives, you were re-engaging with knives. They were a new hobby again. What did you see in the night? Well, we'll get to that in a second, but what did you see in terms of knives, in terms of trends, in terms of things besides fall shut, and bearings that were exciting and new that you kind of missed out on their, advent?
That's a good one. I mean, kind of like you mentioned before, a lot of the Chinese companies, what they're producing, both in terms of designs and quality, really blew me away. A lot of the collaborations with these companies, with Wii, seeing knife makers. So like Christensen, I'll just pick on him, Christensen Knifeworks, right? Seeing him do collaborations with like Wii with the Thug XL? Is that the one he did with them? I remember watching him when he was just grinding scales in his bedroom, and he had the grinder set up to blow it out the window, and that's what he was doing. He was what they used to call pimping knives. I don't think they call it that anymore. I think it's like just customization. But and then to see him to come back and see him doing collaborations, like really cool designs, as well as his own kind of custom knife career, That just blew me away. Seeing all the new YouTubers too, all the new channels, you know, Needs Knives, Metal Complex, like I mentioned before, like none of these people were around when I left, or at least if they were, they weren't on my radar. I wasn't watching them. So, that was really cool. And then as far as trends, kind of like I said earlier, it was actually a little more of a slight disappointment in some of the stuff I loved was now not only popular, but like kind of made fun of. You know, that was a little hard pill to swallow, but I'm okay with it now. I just like what I like, and it is what it is. And those kind of knives always have a special place, like in my mind, just because when I got in, right? And I try to run away from it and try to get into the new stuff a little bit more, which I am. Don't get me wrong. I do like the new stuff. I do like smaller knives. They just aren't the same as kind of the stuff that I came up with. It's just always going to be what I think of as a cool knife.
Yeah. Your old boomer knives, your royal triumvirate, right?
Chris That's Reeve, what it is. Yeah.
Strider. And, I always put Emerson down there as a Duke below them because I've always loved, Emerson knives and the designs and the, you know, everything behind it.
Have you seen, what Lucas is doing? His son?
Yes, I
have. That is so cool. I'm really hoping he kind of carries that torch with the company.
As do I. I've only really seen or paid attention to, his folding kukri. It's a flipper and it looks like, you know, it looks just like an Emerson. I gotta say, or a family resemblance, we'll say.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. He's taken all that, you know, the classic design language, and he's just hopefully moving forward with it. I thought, Forrest was going to do that for Strider knives, but I'm not so sure.
I'm not familiar. Strider went through some strange, reconfiguration a few years back. And, I think they declared that they were closed and then they were back opened in a different form or something. Can you actually, clear that up? Do you have any insight on that?
Yeah, I'll do my best. I don't have, you know, super. So if any of this is wrong, like, don't kill the messenger. But for as I understand it, Dwayne Dwyer and Mick Strider started Strider Knives Incorporated, SKI. So that was the company that kind of everybody knew that was producing production Strider knives. Then at some point, I think 2016, they decided to dismantle the company and go their own separate ways. The exact reasoning behind that, I've heard different things. Some of it I've heard is just a logistic thing. It was just too much to run that kind of a business at that scale. And Mick and Dwayne couldn't do their own custom stuff. And they kind of missed just making knives themselves. And I've also heard that maybe they had a falling out. I don't know exactly why, but they kind of split up. And so Mick just went off and did Mick Strider custom knives and started producing stuff under the kind of performance moniker, which was being done right before Strider Inc. disbanded anyways. And then Dwayne took off and he's doing his own custom knives, which they're both still doing today. But then somewhere along the line, over the last few years, the Mick Strider custom knives side started to do kind of retro knives, if you want to call them. So producing kind of the oldish style knives that they used to do under SKI, now branded as M Strider instead of Strider. So there's some differences, probably legally. But yeah, that's as I understand it, how things got to where they are now.
Okay. Okay. I know the last, you've gotten a couple of new Striders recently and that's, I want to talk about that really cool one you just posted with the compound grind and those kind of Veth like serrations. But, Strider is one of those companies. There are a lot, like, there's a new guard and there's an old guard and we're kind of straddling those, in terms of eras right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about knife YouTubers here. And there are some who still like the Striders, the Emersons, the older knives we're talking about, or the, you know, which ones I'm talking about, the pantheon of
the
boomer classics.
Knives. Yeah, the boomer knives.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yes. Okay. And then there are the ones who like the fancy, colorful, falsetto knives. Which, by the way, I love too. I mean, if it's got steel, I'm into it, basically. But, do you find that coming out with that kind of content right now is it falls on more deaf ears than some of the other stuff you've put out? Like, say, when you talk about Microtech, which is sort of perennially popular?
Yes and no. I would say if I featured kind of the new guard stuff, as you mentioned, more, I think I would pull in a larger audience, ultimately. But a lot of the people that subscribe to me are the people that appreciate like the Striders and the Emersons and things like that. So yes and no. If I publish a video, it seems to do about the same, honestly, for the most part. If I do newer stuff or if I do like Strider stuff, it's just different audiences of my subscriber base connect with it differently than the other side, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. I cover so many different kinds of like the weapons on the wall to slip joints to everything that I'm always kind of like, who's watching this? Like I must have a very random smattering as opposed to some channels that are really focused and really excel because they're focused on, you know, one type of knife, yeah. You know, modern folders or whatever. I've been really excited about the modern slip joints. I have been for a couple of years. Is that on your radar in terms of something you're interested in digging into at all?
A little bit. I got into traditionals years and years ago. And then once again, when I came back and I saw kind of this modern interpretation of them, I was like, that's freaking genius. Like, that is the smartest move ever. What a smart idea. I haven't gotten a ton, probably because I had a vampire jack and it gave me the worst cut of my entire life. Like, right. I've got it on video. It's nasty and it happened like 4 months ago and it hit me right in the knuckle, like karate chopped right in my knuckle. And my knuckle still isn't right. Like, it still swells up every morning. I can't close it. It's swollen and painful. Like, so
I just laughed at your misfortune there.
Because of that, I'm like, no more modern slip joint. No, I just haven't really jumped back into them too much yet, but I think they are pretty cool. And what a smart idea, like genius idea. And some of the custom makers doing slip joints again is so cool, so beautiful. I'm so glad that they kind of are getting their time in the spotlight again.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. To me, they go hand in hand with the overbuilt knives that I like. They go hand in hand with the fixed blade knives. I like to carry a fixed blade too. I love the slip joints, especially in terms of small knives. I mean, I do like small modern, like you mentioned the Roosevelt. I had that on loan for a short while. It was incredible. I mean, it was amazing, but I knew that if I had that, I probably wouldn't carry it. If it's small, it's got to be a slip joint and I'll carry it. Everything else is, you know, more generously proportioned. Something else that is new is influencer knives. And I'll say that I don't like the word influencer. It's a little broad, but knife guy knives, knives designed by guys like you and me who learn CAD and then have his companies over there in China producing them. Every once in a while, something made over here. That's kind of an interesting leveling of the playing field and such. What do you think about all that?
I think it's really, really cool. There are some, you know, there's some annoying things about it, but when I first saw that and I heard that was happening, I thought how amazing that people with really smart ideas and designs are no longer be held to like having machining background, having access to these things, right? Like in most industries, the idea is that you focus on what you can contribute the most with. And so if you can't do that, if you're not a machining guy, you outsource it to somebody who is the best machinist. So from that standpoint, I think it makes total sense. Why should an artistic designer be somebody that knows how to operate heavy machinery? Or why should that be the default? But on the other hand, it does create a lot of noise. Like, it seems like everybody's doing it and they're all very much the same. And there's not as much excitement about it. Every time I pop into Instagram, I feel like I run across somebody else who's doing it. And more power to them, you know, if it can take off and become popular. But it does kind of dilute a little bit of the specialness of new designs, in my opinion, compared to how things used to be, because there was a much higher barrier to entry to make knives, whereas that's kind of been reduced lately, it seems like.
Yeah. Definitely has been reduced. And I'm not thinking of anything in particular because the people I'm thinking of, I like them all, but it opens the door for a dilettante-ish, if that's a word, design. It opens the door for it, like, just kind of a lame design that, that is, manufactured and engineered over there. I don't know how we can make this ugly design a functioning knife, but we will figure it out and we will send you a prototype. It opens the door to that. Now, that said, it's an expensive process. So I would imagine, people don't go about it that way. And like I said, the ones I can think of are all actually really good and they're enthusiasts who use knives. And so they know how to design. Yeah. They know what they want out of a design. But, I got to admit, the very first time I experienced that or saw that come across, I was like, who do they think they are? Like, yeah. They like knives. And then I was like, oh, well, that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. What I want to know is if I design a knife on bronze phosphor washers with no lock bar insert, can I get somebody to make that knife overseas? I don't even know. Like, is it like a default that no, if you're going to have a knife made by us, it has to be on bearings and it has to have a lock bar insert and it has to have a ceramic ball detent. I'm curious if anybody would take on that challenge.
I gotta say, I think, you know who I think would, and because they did, is Best Tech. And
oh, really?
I'll tell you what I know about this. I got this knife that I saw on, the recommendation of he now goes by his, brand, Luck Knives. He actually makes the knives, but he was NAF Sergeant a little while ago and he just collected cool knives and he, declared, you know, I discovered a new, like, American handmade knife. I was like, what is this? And I watched it and it was so cool. And I ordered it called the Mekong Delta Combat Folder, by Gooseworks. That's part of Resco Instruments, bunch of frogmen who make watches and then they make these knives. And I put frogmen in quotes. I didn't mean to. They are, that, but it's part of the branding. That's so cool. You know, the world barefoot frogmen in our basement making knives. That's what I thought. Later on discovered it was made by Best Tech, but they made a knife that has, and I have it over there. I'll show it to you when we're done rolling here, but they made a knife that actually has the feel of like, Strider meets Chris Reeve knives meets Spartan. It's hard to get because you have to order it through Resco Instruments and they only have a limited amount. And then I think they do runs, but my point is the news is good. I think that they are willing to do anything and Best Tech, I think they just knock it out of the park every time.
I've got to check that one out. I'm very interested in that. I would kind of like to see a swing back to that. And that reminds me of like when you asked about the things that I've noticed that's different from like the old guard or the new guard, aside from just sizes and popularity and materials and things like that. Probably the biggest shift that I've noticed is a change from being like ideology focused and company focused into manufacturing focused. Like back in the Hinderer Emerson days, when you got into those brands, it was above and beyond just the object, right? It kind of represented things that you connected with and vibed with in terms of what the company stood for, how cool the people were, if you liked them, if you liked their styling and what they stood for. They created a whole almost mythos, especially like Ernest Emerson, right? And all of his knife fighting and motivational stuff. Like it was above and beyond just the knife. And it seems like now that's gone, right? Now it is just the object and how well that object is made and manufactured is kind of what people prize the most. How tight are the tolerances? How well is it done? How thought out is where the placement of the detent ball is so that you don't get that double step when you close it. That kind of stuff seems to be the bigger focus. And neither one's right or wrong. It's just different. You know, that was a big change that I kind of noticed.
Yeah. And that's kind of a cold, I shouldn't compare it, but there's something a little more humanistic and warm about the first scenario, you outlined and something calculating and materialistic about the second. But I mean, we're paying money. We should expect a certain, amount of engineering and performance and design and all that. I'm not saying that. And I am also similar to that, though I find myself, as I mentioned before, as a sentimental knife collector, going more a lot for story and how a design strikes me emotionally.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
In the interim, when you were not so much into knives, and you were into the pew-pews, as we mentioned before, I wanted to ask you, do you have any particular favorite from that realm that, I don't know, I'm always kind of interested in that as well.
In terms of like style or classification?
Yeah.
AKs were always my favorite thing ever. And honestly, it was me and the Pew Pew world didn't always jive the best because my appreciation for them were derived mainly from their history, their design, the engineering, that kind of stuff, as opposed to necessarily the practical use of them. I shot, but that was never my primary driver. So like with the AK-47s, I got enamored with the history of the early ones that came into the country, produced once again, you know, speaking about China, right? Some argue the very best, highest quality AKs ever produced came from China. But when they first came over, nobody wanted them. They were considered to be the bad guy gun. Nobody bought them. And now they're highly sought after, super collectible. And there's a whole slew of these kind of things. And there's, within the AK community, there's a huge drive to get as close as you can to the original Izmash, Russian made ones. And so a lot of people like the ones made in, I can't remember, but, cause they use the original like machining and tooling that was borrowed from the Russians and that kind of thing. So once again, similar to how I get really small scoped and into something, I just absolutely love that world because learning about every single importer that ever happened with this mark and then it came in here, don't buy these ones because they had a bad heat treat. And so I just really love that whole kind of collector scene there.
So how does that collector scene compare with the knife collector scene?
It's pretty similar. They're just harder to buy and sell. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah, right, sure.
You know, a lot more hoops to go through to get those. You can't just throw them on a Facebook group and say, send me a PayPal and we'll trade. You know, yeah. It's a lot harder to, like, move and get new things. But other than that, it's very similar. They're after the same type stuff, right? They're after the unique things. This one has this marking. This one has that marking. This one's made here, so it's more money, and they bid on it. And it's a whole entire world, especially when you're looking at, like, 80s and 90s. Rifles that were coming in.
Yeah, I bet with the money involved too, it probably makes knives look like the junior partner. Because I've had to remind my wife from time to time, just be glad I don't collect guns or cars. You know, we'd be in the poorhouse now.
Yeah,
you know,
it's knives can get pretty pricey for sure. They absolutely can. That's another thing that's always interesting, though, whenever I feature either of those, knives or pew-pews, how people automatically draw correlations between the two. A lot of people view knives as like an inferior version of a pew-pew, and I never understood why those two things were ever compared. Like, if I have an expensive knife, you know, some of the top comments is, I could get this pew-pew for that, or I could get two of those, and I'm like, yeah, you could buy a leather couch, too. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do with that money, and if you need to do that, then yeah, do that first and then come back the knife if you want it. If you don't want it, then just, you know, don't get it. But yeah, time and time again, that's a huge comparison people make.
Well, the interesting thing, if you look at, say, Knife Rights, Doug Ritter's organization, they've gone from, let's see, they've changed the laws in like 36 states, my own state included, where I couldn't carry or own an automatic or sell it or make it or do anything with an automatic knife. Now I can hide it on my person. It's just in talking to him about that comparison, you know, because people will compare Knife Rights to the NRA also. And, you know, like, oh, it's the NRA for knives. And he kind of takes exception to that, in a way, but he was saying it's a very different topic because he can really, make connections across the aisle, like, because everyone kind of grows up, or so far anyway, everyone has kind of grown up with pocket knives, you know, bombing around in the woods, whatever, you know, most people who grew up as, you know, from kids had pocket knives and they're sympathetic to that. You know, you might you might go to a Democrat senator and say, look, it's about pocket knives. He said that so many times, the people who would have turned down anything about guns would say yes to knives because they see that there isn't a strong correlation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've always thought of knives primarily as cutting tools. I love the concept of self-defense with knives, but more of kind of like an art form type thing. I would never really consider that a first line objective with knives. Obviously, if that's all you got, that's all you got. But I've always considered them cutting tools first and foremost, wanting to separate one thing into multiple things.
I do have a speed round we're going to get to. But before we get to the speed round, I want to talk about you. You said you're trying to get fixed blades more into your life, and yeah. I sensed it's a little bit of an effort, but you like them and everything. Well, you know, you have the Jed Hornbeak, and I have the Necromance, one of three that were made when the one that you were checking out was made, and I am crazy in love with this knife.
So good.
Well, how about this guy? You know, Jed Hornbeak, he's amazing.
He is. Honestly, he's the reason why I decided to check out fixed blades. Like, time and time again, people are yelling at me, you know, full tang or nothing, get fixed blades. Folding knives are already half broke. You know, I've been hearing that so much, but it was Jed Hornbeak. And I'm trying to think of where I came across this stuff. It might have been just Instagram that I first saw his stuff. And then later I saw your podcast with him. But yeah, so cool. Like, I really, really like his stuff. It's like that, in my opinion, it's the perfect mix of like utilitarian usability, but it's got enough flair to it. It's got enough cool stuff going on. And then he also offers different variances of it, right? Like, you can get, he does some pretty funky stuff, but then he also does some pretty, utilitarian traditional type stuff too. But I was blown away by just the quality. Like,
yes,
really well done.
Yeah, it's very hard to show it in a video and express it. I mean, the way it feels in hand, and yeah, the quality of it, and it's not CNC. I mean, it's milled, but it's like hand milled. I don't know what you call it, but non CNC mm-hmm. milled, manual mills. Like, this guy is very, very talented, and he's you know, I just wish he could make more, you know.
Yeah, and in my opinion, his stuff is underpriced. So if you want it, everybody, yeah, go out and snag it, because I don't think you're going to be able to get it as easy in the future.
I think I tend to agree with you on that. And he already, you know, as he said in the interview I had with him, it's not like he makes big batches of things. He makes mm-hmm. small, like very small batches, and he rarely revisits a design, which is, you know, there are some that are that are ongoing models, but frequently he's just like, no, I'm done with that. And like, I'm panicking. Like, I want him to make more of these because, I want one in a longer blade size. Let's see. But anyway, yes, I'm very excited about him. And it was cool to see that you have the Malvern. What's it called?
I have the Malkop. I have the Necromancer and
Malkop.
Yeah. M-A-U-L. What a clever name. And then I have another one too. I cannot remember the name of it. So I have three of his knives.
Okay. Oh, so you do have this one, the chisel ground. Yes. Yeah. Yep, with the holes on the side.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out what those seven holes were like. Yeah. What they must symbolize something, but
yeah, possibly. The other new fixed blade maker that I'm really digging is Savage Creature. I forget the maker's name. Roger Pearson, I think, is his name under the brand Savage Creature. And he's doing like completely different style than Jed Hornbeak, but he does more in the kind of Tracker Dan Blood Shark kind of mm-hmm. style, mm-hmm. but very Japanese katana inspired. So it has like a katana wrap on the handle, but still ultimately just very simple, kind of dark, heavy metal inspired type stuff. Really cool. I'm hoping to get a video up on some of his stuff here soon. I just haven't yet.
Don't you have a picture on your Instagram of a Pekal style knife by him?
I do. Yep. That's one of his. Yep. Out of the three I have, though, the other two are much cooler than that one.
Oh, man. Well, okay. That looks cool to me. I'm a sucker for a Pekal, a well-designed Pekal knife, and I absolutely love Sukamaki wrap. I think it's one of the best grips out there. You don't need a guard.
Yeah. Exactly.
I guess if you have a guard, that's even better, but.
Yeah.
All right. So Carter, I'd like to end, all of my interviews with people who have knife channels with this speed round. So we really get to, you know, get the full cut of your jib here. Just in a one word answer. It's about 20 questions. Are you ready, sir?
Oh man. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's go.
All right. Fixed or folder?
Oh, folder.
Flipper or thumb stud?
Thumb stud.
Washers or bearings?
Washers.
Tip up or tip down?
Oh, I struck tip up. Tip up. I want to be the cool tip down guy, but I'm tip up.
Tonto or Bowie?
Bowie.
Warncliffe or drop point?
Drop point.
Hollow ground or flat ground?
Ooh. Oh, flat. Yeah.
I won't hold you to it, but I got it. Full size or small?
Full size.
Gentleman's knife or tactical knife?
Tactical.
Okay, out the front or out the side?
Out the front, 100%.
All right, cold steel or Emerson?
Oh, why you got to do that? That one's that one's not cool. I have to go Emerson, barely.
Gotcha. Max-Ace or Microtech?
Microtech.
Milled titanium or spring clip?
Oh, let's go milled.
Carbon fiber or micarta?
Micarta.
Button lock or crossbar lock?
Ooh, crossbar.
Finger choil or no choil?
Choil, baby.
Custom or production?
Oh, man, production. I think production.
Form or function?
Form. I'm going to get so much crap for that, but yeah, it's form for me.
I'm right here with you. It's an unpopular stance. Last, your desert island knife. One knife for the rest of your life.
I'd have to go with even though I said production, I'd have to go with a Mick Strider Custom XL.
Mick Strider Custom XL. Very nice. Well, that's, you know, but it also kind of looks like a production knife we're all familiar with. Yeah. So that almost is keeping with both of your philosophies.
Okay. All right. I like that.
So out the front, I was a little surprised by, and I was wondering where you'd go with cold steel or Emerson. That is a hard one that I would never want to be asked.
Yeah. That's a dirty question to ask somebody. That's a tough one.
It is. 'Cause it's like two of your favorite uncles started a knife company, you know, and your crazy uncle Lynn. And your centered uncle. Lynn Thompson, by the way, super cool guy. I finally had a chance to meet him, and man, that was an experience. As has this. It's been a real pleasure meeting you and talking with you, Carter. And it's cool to put a face to a voice at long last. And I look forward to, you know, keeping up the conversation.
Absolutely. Awesome. Thank you for having me, man. It's been fun.
It's my pleasure. Take care.
Yep.
Knife-themed shirts, hoodies, mugs, water bottles, and more. TheKnifeJunkie.com/shop.
If you search Google for the best knife podcast, the answer is The Knife Junkie Podcast.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Carter from Edged Mindset on YouTube and on Instagram. Do check him out. You'll be happy you did. Not only really great close-up, close-up videos, of really, really cool knives, the kind of compelling stuff we've been talking about, but also really great shorts that you definitely, short videos, you know, YouTube shorts that you want in your feed because they're awesome and they're frequently pretty damn funny. So check them out. That's Carter at Edge Mindset. Also, be sure to check out Wednesday for the midweek supplemental and Thursday for Thursday Night Knives, our live stream, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. For Jim working his magic behind the switcher, I'm Bob DeMarco saying until next time, don't take dull for an answer.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, theknifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at theknifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on theknifejunkie.com/Instagram and join our Facebook group at theknifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to bob@theknifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487, and you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.